What is happening, PGA DFS fans? It is time for the PGA DFS Strategy Show. And I know that there's a couple of big weeks coming up, especially with the U.S. Open next week out at Torrey Pines. Everyone is super excited about that, especially with the Open qualifying happening yesterday, the longest day in golf. But before we get to go to San Diego for the week, Ben, we have got plenty to play for this week here at the Palmetto Championship. That's an interesting name, not going to lie to you. Must come from the tall palmetto trees that have been growing on this golf course for the last 300 years or something like that. At least that's what I've read, and a little interesting fact. But before we get into all that, we want to, of course, thank our sponsor of the show, Monkey Knife Fight. Ben, we had a lot of fun last week with the prop. We found that not only do they offer full-length tournament props, but also round one props. And I said to you, listen, I really think Jordan Spieth coming off of not winning on Sunday is set up for not a good round. We got lucky there. He wasn't. Turned it around in the second round. And then the other two, we said Morikawa and Schauffele were coming into a good spot. We got that right for a nice little 4X. So I'm going to try it again this week. I think this golf course is going to play tough. And with it being the first time these golfers are seeing it, I've got one for you this week. The line is set at 69.5. Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tyrell Hatton, and the other name is escaping me right now. But I have Tyrell Hatton being the only one to get under 69.5. I've got Matt Fitzpatrick. I don't think he's going to be able to do it. And the other name was Fleetwood. Sorry. Oh, he picked all three Euros. I'm not sure Fleetwood's ready to shoot two under par at this very difficult golf course. So I got Ty Hatton, who seemed to playing better. Yes, and a notable Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood. That'll be a 4X. What say you? Are you going to join me on that, or do you think all three of them is just going to be a hard golf course?
So I do think more than usual, if I take a stab at a prop like this, it's correlated because we just don't know. It could turn out that the course is super, I don't want to say super easy, but much easier than expected, much more difficult to expect. So there's an element that all these guys will be kind of pulling together. I think for me, if I had to order them, it would be Hatton. I feel the most confident can go low. I trust him a little more. Then you've got Fitzy. Fleetwood is the one, nothing really would surprise me. So I think that's probably where I would go. Fleetwood, the biggest concern of the three Englishmen.
Yeah, definitely agree. Just so volatile right now. And it's a great transition into talking about the Palmetto. This came about because the RBC had to cancel. Now, this was back in late March where the Canadian Tourism Board, I believe that runs the Canadian Open, was like, nope, sorry, not this year. So the tour found this spot here. And we're going to hear a lot about the mission of the Congaree Golf Club in this week, kind of the highlight of coverage, I'm sure, talking about all the good things that they do for the game of golf. But specifically for the actual golf, looks like it is going to set up rather long, par 71, 7,700 yards. So by a stroke average, it might be one of the longest on tour, Ben. And a lot of comparisons to the Australian Sandbelt region, if you will. I think it has a lot to do with Tom Fazio and the designers of it and the owners. Royal Melbourne President's Cup is in that region. A lot of course comparisons there. Sungjae Im obviously played pretty well at the President's Cup. So you buying into the course type at all, or is this like, okay, it's Bermuda and we just need to play Kevin Kisner again?
I wish it was the latter, but no, I am buying into something like that. I think there's a links element to it. So I look to some guys in the European Tour who have experience with that. It's a different style of golf. I don't think it's, you know, you have to overhaul it or anything, but these little edges, when we don't have answers, everyone wants to know, how's the course going to play? What are the skill sets? The truth of the matter is, until we see it, we're not going to have a great idea, but you can still plan for it. It doesn't mean spray and pray, and taking elements from the Sandbelt in Australia, from the European Tour, and even from, you know, RSM Heritage and the Florida Swing, I think are all useful strategies.
Yeah, for sure. And specifically this course, I mean, you go to Savannah, Georgia and head inland 30 miles and you'll get there. So it's not very far from Sea Island, where a lot of these guys live, the RSM, like you said. So forecast will play something into it if it does rain. We haven't had a lot of rain in this region of the world lately. A couple of thunderstorms over the past couple of weeks, but it should play firm and fast unless we get a dumping, of course. But Ben, anything else you wanted to make note about the first time we're heading to this golf course? You already mentioned the links run-up, ability to run the ball up to the greens. I think that's a nice test for golfers that are looking to play well next week at Torrey Pines.
Yeah, I think they always try to maybe intentionally or unintentionally, provide some sort of natural test for the guys to entice people to come. Because if it's a totally different skill set, why would you waste your time and then have to fly across the country? But if there's something you can work on with your game naturally here, and I think there is some of that, there is water in play on a lot of these holes. So we'll have to see. As Chat just pointed out, there is rain in the forecast. Just a lot of it's just a mess. If I had to describe this tournament in one word, it would be just, it's a messy tournament. There's so many things. And as we're about to talk about, it's not just that. It's also the fact that the US Open qualifiers have been going on as we speak.
Yeah, a nice little transition there to speak about. Now, I love it personally. I think it's one of the most fun days that you can have in golf. You know, going out, you got to play 36 holes to get into a major championship. One that has, I believe, the biggest purse, if I'm not mistaken, of all four of the majors typically. I don't know how much that matters to all these golfers. Certainly the ones that win it most of the time, likely it doesn't matter all that much. I'm sure $2 million is definitely going to matter to them a little bit. However, over 70 of the golfers competing this week, and it is a full field, about 156, competed on Monday. And we talked a little bit, or even today, this morning, we talked a little bit about our strategy focusing on this. And here's the logistical portion. Listen, they played 36 holes yesterday or finished today. That means they're getting to the course, if they're lucky, maybe right around here, unless they're flying net jets, flying private, which many of the golfers we're going to talk about likely are not. So they're going to get here this afternoon. It's only really one day to prepare for it, which is tomorrow. So certainly there's that element to it. Now, there's the one thing I will say, golfers that played very well. Do you think that, and we talked a little bit about this before, do you think that we should be looking at those guys as targets to play good and carry that momentum? Or do you think some of them will end up saying, hey, you know what? I don't care about this week. I just want to get to Torrey. I made it and I want to get there.
It's one of the more difficult questions that you get. And these are just awkward scenarios. So you can take it one of two ways, obviously. If the guy played really well and he qualified for the US Open, that's probably the best golf he's played in quite some time. So that's got to be a positive catalyst. But now he's going to California randomly in a week to compete in maybe the biggest spot in his life, depending on who the player is. I don't know how naturally you're not somewhat focused on how do I attack Torrey? How do I do there? And you're not thinking about Congaree in the Palmetto. But on the flip side, as we're going to talk about, if your guy was awful in a US Open qualifier, that doesn't exactly set the stage for coming in and playing fantastic golf. And he just played, you know, upwards of 36 holes when normally they would already be on site getting the work in.
Yeah. And certainly not playing 36 either, right? Probably maybe at most playing 9 holes. So it is more golf. And I know these guys are professional golfers and it's what they do for a living, but hey, listen, 36 holes for anybody is quite a lot in one day. So, okay. We're going to be talking about the golfers that played yesterday throughout the show today. We're not going to go line by line or anything like that, but I do have all 70 golfers that played. I have it on our notes. So when we do talk about them, we'll mention, hey, either they missed the cut and didn't play well, or missed the cut and played terrible, or ended up getting through or withdrew, which is actually maybe the last note I'll mention, Ben. Guys that withdrew, say, after 18 holes when they played okay but had no shot of making it, would you put them as a leg up against the golfers that didn't play the second 18 holes?
Yeah, to me, the worst situation in a lot of ways would be like if you grinded all the way out and then you just missed.
That's a good point. That would be tough.
Like I would rather have my guy, just in theory, of course, just not have it and withdraw or probably make it. The guys who are like the alternates, that's the worst because they kind of have to plan for Torrey a little bit, but they're also maybe not even in the tournament. But I will say,
real got quick, a big name there for you too, by the way.
What? Yeah, yeah. Oh, we're gonna
get in that exact scenario. Go ahead.
We're gonna get to them. Yeah. No. And I just want to say the information that you put together is absolutely fantastic on these guys. And Chad, if you are interested in that, we're gonna drop that on our premium Slack chat throughout the week. So if you want to get inside, we've got packages starting just weekly. We've got the monthly. We've got some promos running. We're gonna talk about them throughout the show. But it's one of the many reasons to get inside the ropes because Jason's gonna provide that info, all the golfers in this field and what they did in these qualifiers, because I do think that makes a difference this week.
Yeah, I certainly do too. And there's, like you said, a big name in that scenario. Keith Mitchell is that guy. Mm-hmm. Grinded all the way through, missed the cut on the last hole, and here he comes in 8,900 this week. We'll discuss that a little bit more as we move on. But before we get to Keith Mitchell, let's talk about some of the stars of the field. But of course, before we do, just on that note, Ben, if you are not an Osmo Plus member and would like to become one, well, we've got a chance for you to win an Osmo Plus monthly pass tonight. Head on over to our Twitter channel, and all you got to do is tweet at us. Who's going to score more points, Donovan Mitchell or Kawhi Leonard? Should be a big game tonight. And Ben, who are you going with? You're a little more tuned into the NBA than I. I would say Donovan Mitchell seems to be playing well, but it's Kawhi Leonard, and you can never bet against him.
Yeah, I'm betting against him. I mean, I'm a Jazz. Come on, I got to root for my Jazz.
You're a Jazz guy. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, Mitchell's going to be busy tonight. We certainly have got content covering you there. Two games slated, very interesting. Probably be betting the Jazz tonight. I think they come out strong at home.
For sure. And if you want to see the player projections for the DFS side for NBA on a couple of those guys I just mentioned, those are free today, as are the MLB player projections and the PGA rankings for this week. And listen, you are going to need the data for all of these guys. It is certainly a weak field, and this is where the long-term data that we have really comes into play. It's ironing out some of these values that we'll get to. But let's talk about DJ and Brooks. I have a theory on Brooks Koepka I want to pass to you. Ooh. I've looked at the past couple of times he's come in before a major, and he always has a slow start. And every single time that I've looked, the first or second rounds or both are terrible. Now, do you think he does it purposely to try and play from behind?
No, but I do think there's something to Brooks in particular that he everything he does, particularly around these majors, plus and minus weeks, I think is coordinated to peak at the right time. And I think there is something to that where Brooks would be more content easing in and getting some reps than focusing on actually winning this tournament. So I do see the merit in that. It's just tough because this field is absolutely garbage, and just talent alone could put DJ or Brooks, you know, far away from the rest of the field.
If we take their best strokes gained over the last year, either of them could win by 8 strokes or more. Honestly, as weird as that sounds, they really could against this field. Now, neither of them, DJ specifically, is not playing that great. Brooks, of course, we only know likes to show up in majors. Then you got Matt Fitzpatrick, who is a little too volatile for somebody at 10,400 for me this week. Ben, I would much rather, if I'm playing a guy up here, start with Ty Hatton, who seems to be trending in the right direction.
I'm with you, Ty Hatton. It's been a weird stretch, though, when I look at Ty Hatton. He's playing very consistent, but he's shown absolutely no upside. And yep. I think that's going to change. He's made 6 or 7 cuts, no finish better than 18th, no finish worse than 39th. He's just been kind of in that middle range, you know, his third page of the leaderboard style. But tee to green, he looks good. Everything else checks out. You've done some real shady things. I say Ty Hatton, and you try to leave us, but you know what? I think that he's built for a lot of different course conditions. Guy's played in Europe, of course. He's done well in Florida. His win was down there at API. Heritage was good. What's not to like? Not to mention, and we're going to talk about this a lot, you need this is not Kyle Stanley 6,100 week. This is the direct opposite. Every penny is crucial here. 10-2 makes a big difference over 11-4.
Sure does. And obviously my camera didn't like us talking about Ty Hatton there. Sorry about that. Just knocking. I don't know why. Seems like a good setup this week, but a couple of other guys that maybe seem a little bit more expensive than they should be. But given the fact that there's a massive drop off in talent, at least in my opinion, when you go down to this next level, Harris English, I think maybe is the most overpriced or sticker shock because he hasn't been playing well since his win. But Sungjae Im, I can get with the 9,700 for Sungjae Im. We've seen it before, but why is he in some of the worst form he's ever been in his career?
You always throw out conspiracy theories, so maybe I can do one. Maybe he's just so focused on the Olympics that I don't know, but Sungjae has not been good. The Irons have lost in 2 straight. I don't know what to make of it, but he is struggling a little bit. I think the price is fair, but it's not a direct, you know, oh, this is a great plug and play style, because I am a little worried about where he's at, particularly with his irons, which, you know, historically have not been a weak link. And that is concerning.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he's played at least a couple of good rounds, but is struggling on Friday of all times. I mean, I think it's 3 straight weeks where it's been a Friday blow up that has kind of cost him here. So it is a little weird. Then the names get interesting. Patton Kizzire, 9,100 after the form finally broke. Ben, it's not for me this week.
No, didn't like him last week. He'd been burning me for a while. I kind of got some redemption at Memorial. Not that it really mattered, to be honest. But, you know, you look at that, you've got a lot of Englishmen. We've got Poulter. We've got Fleetwood. We already mentioned Fitzy and Hatton. So I think it looks all good there. I think I got to ask you about his Higo, though. What is the deal with that at 9K?
Yeah, I saw that when they printed his odds, Ben, he came out at like 40 or 50 to 1, which, listen, it's not a great field, but he hasn't done it on the PGA Tour yet. And listen, I don't want to get into a debate about European Tour and what it means. There's some great golfers over there. Much better than the Korn Ferry Tour, in my opinion. Maybe not much better, but certainly better. I think if you look, there aren't many people that will rate other tours in terms of a true strokes gain, but there are a couple of people in the industry that do, Data Golf being one of them, and they have the European Tour not that much higher than the Korn Ferry overall. So we've seen plenty of success from the Korn Ferry to the PGA. Can he go do it? He's got the talent. We know that. He's got a great swing, one of the best iron players there. It's just so way too unproven. I would much rather play, and I'm sorry to throw this name out so early, but why not? 20 minutes in. If you had the under on me mentioning John Pach, cash the ticket, because I'm going to mention him. I'd rather play him at 6,900 than Garrick Higo at 9,000 this week.
If you had the under on me knowing who John Pach was, you could cash that ticket too. So
you want the 30-second? Yeah, I'll give you the elevator pitch. We brought him up, so we might as well. He was the number one in the PGA Tour University ranking, which is the PGA Tour's new thing for college seniors that give them automatic Korn Ferry Tour status. Got to number one in the amateur ranking in the world, went to Florida State, just a really quality player, had some wins. But if you look at his tail of the tape, it's a lot of top tens and a lot of top fives. So model of consistency, we saw Morikawa obviously translate that into a win very early in his career. Same exact spot for Pac, playing at the RBC Canadian Open Week, which is where Morikawa started. So be interesting to see if he can kind of take the other route. John Augenstein is another name I've brought up to you a couple of times. He's been terrible, right? Except for the made cut last week or 2 weeks ago. We'll see if John Pac can kind of nip that in the bud and go the other way.
He has no pitcher on DraftKings. That was a mortal lock. yeah. I mean, listen, this is a field that is wide open. We're going to talk about it. I mean, there's about 100 guys in the 6K range. It's someone's going to have to play good. And this is a week, particularly if Brooks and DJ don't show up and steal win equity. I mean, your betting card is going to be a wild looking situation. And we're going to talk about that throughout the show as well. But these nines, yeah, I'm with you. I think a guy like Higo he's a fine player, but he's a little overpriced. You're really losing a lot of the upside because it's baked into the price.
So with all this being said, can you buy into playing Ty Hatton and Sung J M, or are you just looking to say, you know what, one of those top four guys probably going to get it done. I'll throw Fitzy out. I'll take my guy and then go to say Alex Noren at 8,900.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Alex Noren, like many players in this field, there's an element of sticker shock. Alex Noren's been around a flat seven player in a lot of events, and I've used him to decent success. I think a lot of people have used salary relief. He's making cuts. He's made six straight, gained across the board at Memorial. But this is a guy, Alex Noren, has a lot of experience winning in Europe, and, you know, the PGA Tour's had his chances here and there. I feel much more comfortable going to him over a guy like Higo, who I still don't know that much about. And I think the range of outcomes in a lot of ways, it's just really not for me.
Agreed. And when the tournament first came out and Keith Mitchell's name was printed at 8,800, I'm saying, oh, well, pretty good form, couple of top tens, should be a course where you can use strokes gained off the tee. But Ben, he kind of fits into that category as he went out and grinded 36 holes and did not get it done for the US Open qualifier, came, like you said, I think in the second alternate spot. So Keith Mitchell, is he a guy you're going to want to buy back into because he's kind of from the area or lives in the area, or at 8,800, you'd rather play maybe somebody below or somebody above?
So I'm not in love with it. I will say though, Keith Mitchell drives the ball at an elite level. And in a week like this, we're searching for ways to do it. Like what is the formula? Maybe it's driving distance. Maybe it's aggression off the tee. So he's going to fit that mold. You know, we just had a question about Poulter in chat. It's the same story. Oh, yeah. I worry about his distance and that's fair, but I think he might have a path to do it, similar to Kisner, similar to those guys. Maybe it's be really good around the greens, make your putts. We don't know. So Keith Mitchell fits the build off the tee. His short game is absolutely horrendous, though. That's not going to change.
Well, let's kind of expand on this a little bit. I'm sorry I missed Poulter there because I did want to bring this up. You talk about building in within a box of certain golfers when you're talking about a theme. So if this course, let's just say it plays firm and fast, like, you know, the Australian Sandbelt courses do, and it becomes an around the green and on the green game instead of, you know, a longer iron play, which we kind of expect with 7,700 yards. If it ends up being firm and fast, that'll negate some of it, where now it does become a short game scenario. Ian Poulter and Kevin Kisner seem like a great way to start a lineup in that type of build.
Absolutely. Well said. The thing is, I wouldn't look to like pair them with Keith Mitchell. To me, that wouldn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Nope.
Because you want most of your team, not everyone, but most of them pulling the same direction. So I think there's absolutely merit to doing that. And then, you know, if you get it right, it's an advantage that you kind of have over the field, and it's tee time stacks, even pairing up tee times of guys playing together. There's a lot of small edges that I think you can do there. And that is one of them.
Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, last week, you know, regardless of Rahm, and that's been beaten to death, so we don't need to talk about it. He played with Morikawa and Schauffele in the opening two rounds. Morikawa won. Schauffele was a T10. If you stack those guys, I know on FanDuel, you could do it. You couldn't do it on DraftKings, of course, a little too hard. But again, it's just ways that you can do it. They were all kind of not too highly owned either. So another guy that fits this exact mold in this range, Brant Snedeker, 8,400. He's literally the exact same player that we kind of just talked about with Kisner and Poulter. Sounds like a pretty good way to start a pretty balanced lineup, contrary to maybe what everybody else will be building this week.
Rinse and repeat. He's another guy in that bucket. You know, you've got Lucas Glover, who's getting a lot of buzz because he's got ties to the area, seems to know the course better than anyone in the field. Other than that, though, I think HV3 is there, who's an interesting player. He's kind of been little all over the place, but he's shown some form. And you mentioned Sneds, who can get crazy hot. And then I'm going to go to the other bucket now. Johnny Vegas is with Keith Mitchell, elite driver of the ball. So you've got a lot of different types of players in this 8K range.
Yeah, you sure can. And this is where maybe we can go back to, you know, golf's longest day. And I can tell you, so Lucas Glover didn't make the cut and shot two over. So really didn't play well, played all 36 holes. We've got a lot of the guys, honestly, because of so few that made it through, a lot of guys in this scenario that just didn't play well, but played all 36 holes. How do you feel about them? Are you just basically throwing out the fact that they didn't even, you know, it's not that big of a deal? Or are you looking at their form and saying, nope, they're just out of form?
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to override too much, but I think it's a situation. This is why I think the data you gathered is so valuable. In a field like this, a lot of guys to me are going to grade out, you know, pretty equal, all things being considered. And I will look at that and say, okay, this guy did that. Maybe that's a slight knockdown. Where is he playing in terms of his tee time and whatnot? Little things. So it's not the end all be all, but I don't think it's meaningless. I really don't.
No, I don't either. And there's a couple of other scenarios that I want to bring up as well as we get to the golfers. So Johnny Vegas, he had to play this morning. He got through. Now, he's been superb off the tee. In fact, he's been one of the best all year. So if we're in that OTT bucket, do we just not care about the fact that, you know, he had to play this morning? He's probably not getting here till tonight. Probably likely never seen the course. He doesn't live in the area or anything like that. Is this a guy that you might want to fade because he did end up making it and he's going to have literally the least amount of time of anybody probably to prepare? So- Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not the best situation. A lot of it will come down to ownership. This is a full 156.
Yeah.
So I think the opportunity to take lucrative fades is very enticing. But if a guy is only, you know, a handful of percent owned, and we'll talk about that as the week goes on, you're just evaluating him kind of how do you like the play. And I think the Johnny Vegas fits specific builds. You mentioned his off the tee game has been world class. And that is something that you can't ignore.
No, and I'm sure as our chat just astutely pointed out, he probably wished it was Glen Abbey as Vegas did have a couple of good starts there. So maybe he'll channel the good time. Maybe it's just a month thing or a week thing and not a tournament thing. I don't know. Maybe that'll be the next phase of research we go into. Probably not. But in any case, got a couple more guys in this 8K range that we should probably chat about. I think we'll be in a decent amount of lineups this week. Russell Knox seems to be trending. Doc Redman. Here's another scenario for you. Doc Redman, he went out and he shot even par in his first nine holes, was even par through his second nine. No, I'm sorry. Looks like he only played nine holes, shot even par and walked off the golf course after nine holes. Comes in at 8,000 this week. Is he okay? I mean, basically, we don't look at him qualifying. He played okay. Didn't play good. Didn't play bad. 8,000 doesn't seem like that awful of a price. Four or five cuts with a top 10 in there.
Don't mind it. I think the U.S. Open thing for him is meaningless.
Yep.
But what's definitely meaningful is that to start Doc Redman's career, he was basically automatic off the tee. It was by far his strongest thing, gained automatically off the tee. He's now lost off the tee in 6 of 8. I don't know what to really make of that because the irons have upticked. The putter has upticked. He's gained in 7 of 9 with the putter. But why? Is there anything that you could point out of why Doc Redman, of all people, doesn't seem to be driving the ball well?
Yeah, this is where, you know, if we had like a reporter for like every 10 or 15 golfers, this would mean a lot. Has he switched his driver length? Has he gone to a longer one? Is he trying to get distance? Mm-hmm. Is he working with his swing coach on trying to add more? Because if you look at his profile over the last couple of years driving the ball, he has focused more on accuracy. That's where he's gained more strokes when he does gain strokes off the tee. So if the accuracy has come down and the power numbers have come up a little bit, Ben, I think that's probably a pretty good sign. I'm just noticing my collar there is a little messed up. Sorry. I don't know why that's a sign with Doc Redman, but maybe it is and that I fixed it. Maybe that means he fixed his driver swing this week, Ben. Wider fairways. So I do think if the irons are in form, like you said, I think it's a pretty good spot at 8,000.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I really don't understand why a guy seems, you know, usually if you're a good driver, you're kind of just a good driver, but doesn't seem to be the case with him. He's got to correct that. Still a lot of talent. And as we've seen with him, you know, he's got the ability to go low. And when he's got it going on, really big upside.
I know this guy has won in the state of South Carolina before, but 8,100 for CT Pan. We have a top three at Honda. Maybe that's why we're getting this.
Yeah. I mean, didn't he win?
He won the RBC. Yeah.
The RBC. See, there's too many acronyms. I was going to say one RSM, yeah. But he RBC. Didn't. That would just be not true. CT Pan is someone I played him last week and he made the cut, but he didn't really do anything. He's kind of like Doc Redman with the opposite. You know, he's had some elite putting performances and now his putter's really left him. Going to need to be crisp with the irons. I worry a little about the distance with him because these, you know, there's like 500 yard par fours on this course.
Yeah, there's three par fours on the front side that are like 520, 540 and 490.
Yeah, that's no joke.
That'd be good with your three wood CT Pan.
Yeah, him and Russell Knox better, eat their vegetables because this is going to be. They better hope it's firm and fast. That's a long distance. But again, CT, they know what kind of players they are. They can certainly handle it. Got to be crisp with your irons, though, if you're going to be laying back in the fairway.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't see CT Pan having to go through qualifying. Maybe he didn't even try or. If I'm missing him, let me know, chat. Appreciate it, but I don't think I am. Scott Stallings, another guy that seems maybe a little overpriced given that, you know, I mean, he has made four straight cuts though, Ben, I guess. Maybe that's why he's here. I don't know. I don't see it for Stallings this week.
No, kind of indifferent to the play, but he probably will get squeezed. He's made some cuts, but he's done really nothing except putt. He had three explosive putting performances. He gained four strokes putting in three straight weeks, including 8 at the Byron Nelson. I mean, if you're going to get 8 strokes putting, you'll be just fine.
You should get top 5 for that. Yeah, to be honest,
not much to say. Give me as painful as it is to say, I'd even rather play Luke List than Scott Stallings.
Oh, what a great, great segue for me to talk about Luke List here, who, man, you can't strike the ball much better than he has and have the results that he's got. But that has kind of been the MO for Luke List over the last, 4 years now? Just literally can't put the ball in the bottom of the hole. But at least for one round, he put the ball in the bottom of the hole on this golf course. As I read earlier this week, he still holds the course record here. So whether that means it was just one round or a couple of rounds or he's played it a few times, we at least know he's been around it once. And is off the tee game has been pretty good. So is this the week where maybe he doesn't need to make as many putts, or the putter actually works for him?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I've been playing list, and it's really frustrating because you know what you're getting. So there's an element, but he's a good enough scrambler, and off the tee he's gaining every week. He's gained 9 straight weeks. It's just -3, -4, -3, -5 with the putter each week, and it kills him. He has so many looks from 5 to 10 feet, and he just does not convert them. And the more I watch golf over the years, I can't stress enough how important those momentum putts are to save a round. It's not just one shot in a lot of scenarios, because
so true.
You miss it and then you look and he falls apart, and it's been the killer for him in recent weeks. Still think he's worth playing, absolutely, but you just need to get the putter closer to zero.
And Wyndham Clark, another one of those that at the Memorial, he was sitting right on the cut line, had an 11 footer for par. And like you said, you just knew sitting there, if he misses this, there's no chance he's making the cut. He's not getting that stroke back. And he ended up shooting 8 over for the 2 days. I mean, he played the last 3 or 4 holes at 6 over. But that's exactly what happened. So hopefully List makes the 8-footer here this week for par and translates that into something good. Now, same price on a guy, our friend of the show and in the chat just brought up, Rafa Cabrera-Bello. And thanks, Tokyo, for that little tidbit. He's been playing in the last couple of weeks and gotten a decent return. Is that return going to continue?
I think so. I hope so. He's going to be a key piece for me this week. 3 straight pretty good showings, positive with the irons in all 3, positive tee to green in all 3. He's European, which I think is a boost this week. He's handled a lot of different types of courses. And I mean, he's got to have found something. He's been really bad. This is a good player, and he's had an awful year-long stretch. So I'm begging that he did find something. And if he did, I think we both agree that 78, this would be a guy in the 9s normally if he was in form.
Hey, I think you just gave a bunch of good stats there on him. I mean, the 3 straight made cuts with some positive strokes gain elements in there as well. I don't see a reason not to play him this week. I don't see him having to try to play the 36 holes. I don't have his name on my list. So I'm definitely in it for Rafa this week. Another guy that's in this price range, did qualify, having a pretty good year. Maybe he'll use the qualification as a little stepping stone to get back to the good form, because Martin Laird showed us something at the PGA though, and he's made 4 or 5 cuts. So what do you do with somebody like Laird, who's definitely having a breakout season with the win, but hasn't been playing great? You think he's looking ahead to Torrey, or do you think it's just another week for him where he's just trying to pile on those FedEx Cup points?
Yeah, this is one of the tougher ones for me, where we talk about, like, is it even good that he qualified in relation to this week? Because it shows that his 11 strokes with the approach at the PGA, maybe there's some of that magic still left. But on the other side, it's a huge step up next week, and he was not probably planning exactly to play in the US Open. So I worry a little about that. I think for me, this is where it gets murky. We've got some other guys in this range, but we've got some, you know, Ben Martin is here, who I do like. Camilo is right there. But we're scattered with JT Poste. A lot of names that are directly in this US Open qualifying gossip.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt about it. Let's talk about JT Poste. Now, we're in the range now. Here's a guy that 2.5, 3 months ago, you know, the second that this tournament was announced, it was going here, was the first guy to come out and kind of say, hey, I can't wait to go, you know, and loves the course. We know he lives in Sea Island. We already brought that up. So at 7,600. Now, his caddy said they're heading to Torrey. He didn't mean that. He just meant in 2 weeks, and he, you know, showed that he got home. I think this is a guy that I'd like to try and say, hey, you know what? We've found momentum here. Finally, we've been playing meh golf, right? We've made a couple of cuts, came in 65th right at the Memorial. It hasn't been going great, you know, 26th at the Wells Fargo, where we've, you know, competed in before. I think this might have been a turn of good events for both him and Erik van Rooyen, who's priced right around him.
Yeah, I mean, Poston needs to find something. His stats are absolute. It's honestly a miracle that he's made any cuts.
Yeah, it's putting. Obviously, it's all putting. Yeah,
it's all putting. He's been awful in every facet, and he's a good player long-term. So maybe he did find something there. You know, I think that's worthwhile to at least consider. EVR is in a similar boat, as you mentioned. It hasn't been as dire. You know, he's flashed some form here and there. And then there's, you know, the, like I said, Ben Martin, Sheamus is there, Bo Hogue. Like, you're going to find these names in the mid sevens this week. It's just a product of the field.
Yeah, for sure. And I've got a couple of notes on each of those guys there. Now, Eric Van Rooyen, 7,500. Let's go back to Poston, though, for a second at 76. I had one more question I wanted to ask. Do you put him in the bucket with Snedeker, Kisner, Poulter range? Or do you think that if a Dustin's going to win, Poston can be right there as well? Where do you fit him in? Because we know that he's been doing it all with the putting, but when he plays good, it's not typically his putting that shines. It's typically the approaches that gives his putter the chance to shine.
Yeah, I don't really put him as like a specialist in my mind. He's someone that, I mean, if I was like stacking up, you know, like super driver heavy guys, I don't think I'd necessarily go there, but he's someone that fits a lot of different builds. The key for him, you mentioned, he's got to at least take some of the pressure off, you know,
his putter.
You can't do it all with the putting. It just doesn't work like that.
No, it really doesn't. So a couple more names. Let's talk about Seamus Power. This is maybe one of the most interesting stories from the US Open qualifying that I have notes on. I really don't understand it. Maybe the only thing I can think of here is that, okay, I'll just set the scenario. He shot even par on his first 18 holes. Then he was 5 under through 16 on his second set of 18 holes. The cut was going to be -8. He had a par 3 and a par 5 to finish. I have no scores and a withdrawal right after that. So the only logical explanation for me is he hit his tee shot on the par 3 and it went in the water, if there was even water, or out of bounds, or whatever the case is, and he had no chance of posting the 8 under, even with an albatross on the next hole. So that's why he withdrew. Because I can't imagine that, given the fact that he was 3 shots out, he wouldn't try and play those last 2 holes to try and go 2-3 and get into that playoff.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea, but it would make sense that he's not a moron and he wouldn't play all that golf to have an outside chance and then just be like, nah, it's not worth it.
I'm not going
to
do it, right?
Like, that would be pretty dumb. I'd have to have a chat with one of my favorite golfers on tour there. But he is playing pretty well, and it's not a surprise to see him flirting with qualifying for the US Open. I think that the game is in decent shape, and he's someone, it looks like he's taken advantage of the starts that he's got. You know, he got Puerto Rico, Corrales, some weak fields, made those cuts, got Wells Fargo, made that cut, and now he hit a top 10 at Byron Nelson. So he's doing a lot with a little here on the PGA Tour this year, and that's what guys have to do. So these are big time weeks for guys like, you know, Power.
The finishing couple of holes at Byron Nelson, I think, cost him getting his card back right now, or right then, I should have said. Still, he'll have plenty of opportunities to do so coming up. The top 9 at Byron at least got him into this week. And like you said, he's been playing some pretty good golf, even a top 10 back on the Korn Ferry Tour at the MGM about a month ago or a month and a half ago. So certainly interested in Power. Like the fact that he was hanging around and came back and was 5 under on that second 18 holes. I think there is some momentum to carry from there. So 7,500, definitely a little bit interested in Seamus Power this week. A couple of more guys in this range. Let's talk about David Lipsky. He's here this week. I'm not really sure. It must be a sponsor invite. Been playing a lot on the Korn Ferry Tour. In fact, I think he's even coming close to getting his PGA Tour card through the Korn Ferry Tour right now. So are you ready to roster Lipsky at 7,400, or should he really be in the like 6,800 range until you play him?
I tend to say that more. So, you know, he's another guy, again, doing most of the damage over in Europe when he does play well. I just see him amongst guys that, you know, they're not the best players on tour, obviously not, but they're solid enough regulars, whether you're talking about Wierenski.
Fits right there with them if I had to peg.
Benny Ahn is there. I don't know what to say about that. But you have Uline. I trust him more. And then I have to bring up, who the hell is Wilco Niemember, whatever, another South African. They're just pumping him out. 7,300 for Wilco.
All right. So if,
go ahead.
Yeah. If this is going to turn into an, you need to gain 6 strokes off the tee to make the cut week, he's going to make the cut. No problem. This guy drives it maybe further than Bryson DeChambeau. No, I'm not going to go out and say that, but he is literally 5 yards behind. I think he's longer than Cameron Champ. From everything I've watched about him, this guy off the tee, I mean, he probably, if he just focused on world long driving contests, he probably could make some money. The rest of his game, however, not so polished. I mean, we're on the European tour, and if you look since January 20th, just on his game log, it's not hard to see. We've only made three cuts this year. We haven't had many starts. I don't even know how he got this sponsor invite. Maybe he's involved next week, and that's how, and he just parlayed that in. I'm not sure. Regardless, if you need to gain six strokes off the tee in the first two rounds to make the cut, he'll be there. If not, I'd rather play another guy that actually, over the last 9 weeks, Ben, has gained the most strokes off the tee of any golfer in the field. And now, granted, maybe he has another start or two over some of the other golfers that I looked up, but it's Tom Lewis. And if you want to see the full list, of course, check out the data article that I just put out. It's free on our website, of course, on the Awesome site. So yeah, Tom Lewis gained over six strokes off the tee recently. So do you want to play Tom Lewis, or is the other parts of his game not in shape enough? Oh, also, he withdrew after 18 holes and shooting even par at the qualifier.
So Tom Lewis is a wild man. We've known that. He won a Korn Ferry, you know, qualifier.
Out of nowhere.
Literally out of, it's like this form. You look at his, he's someone, you look at the game log and you quickly realize it would make no sense to play him, but that just doesn't tell the story because he can come out of nowhere. Should you hone in on him? Absolutely not. Is he likely to miss the cut? I would say yes.
Probably. But
Tom Lewis has more extreme top end equity than a lot of people in this range. And for that, if you're talking about, you know, trying to take down 250K, you've got one thing going for you. It's right now off the tee. Can he pair that with anything else? If he does, watch out, because Tom Lewis could be that type of guy.
Agreed. He's in my GPP pool this week. He would not, in my opinion, be considered for one of my main lineups or anything like that. Just because, like you said, the volatility is way too high in a guy like this. I would rather, if we're going in that range, to play somebody that I would consider in my main lineup, let's talk about Nick Taylor for a second. He's a guy that obviously we've seen some pretty good upside winning Pebble. We've seen a good stretch of golf now making the cut in three straight. So is he a guy you'd rather pick in Tom Lewis in a main or cash lineup versus a GPP format?
Oh yeah, no question. Okay. Range of outcomes are much, you're looking more at like that 42nd place finish a lot more often with a guy like Taylor than you are with Tom Lewis. So again, it's probably range all in all, I'm not super interested in, but you've got some flyers to me that like Bronson Burgoon is kind of interesting as a flyer. Bryce Garnett, I've seen chat bring up. I see where you're going there as well. And our premium projections, I'll give you guys a little sneak peek. They have Bryce Garnett as a big time value this week. So that's something that the whole team here at Awesome O does like, but this is why I love doing the show with you. Who the hell is Davis Thompson? Another guy that is looking for a breakthrough performance.
So he was number two in the PGA Tour University rankings, actually. So he will also be joining John Pach on the Korn Ferry Tour for the rest of this year. But before they do that, of course, they get sponsor exemptions, and Davis Thompson secured one of those. He's a guy actually we saw not too long ago at the US Open. He was playing in, I forgot who he was playing with. Maybe he was playing with DJ. That's why I knew this. He was playing very good in the first round and then ended up missing the cut, just totally bombing on the back nine there. But this guy with a ton of talent, no doubt about it, played on the Walker Cup with Pac. These guys certainly have the talent. If I had to pick two that I'd like to bet on over the next year between the Korn Ferry Tour and here, these two guys would certainly be up there, and certainly a guy like Steven Yeager, who we should see in the next couple of weeks, I would think. He's another guy that has been playing really well this year. Regardless, David Thompson, 7,200. I'd rather play Pac at 6,900 just for the sure fact that we're getting $300 savings, which can get you, you know, from something like 9,900 and who's there that I don't like? Harris English up to Ty Hatton. I would, that's all the world for me. This week.
Big differences, couple hundred bucks this week. So, okay, I'm formulating this. We got Pack over Thompson. Steven Yeager, haven't heard that name in a very long time.
Yeah, he's a couple of years.
I think he's got a 58, so he's got that on the resume.
He does. Not here this week, so don't be looking for his name.
It would be doubtful.
Should be a good field, though.
He does. I mean, I think this is where we start to get into, you know, the dumpster dives, and that's all right. I do want to bring up one guy, though. Sure. 6,900, Hank Lebioda. Did he possibly stand out for you? Because right now he was someone that I really was drawn to, playing really good golf, and the irons have been electric lately. He's a Florida guy. Not that that matters, but I think it can help. He's certainly familiar with Bermuda.
Yep.
I think him, Caliota, as a pay down option is a pretty enticing spot.
Yeah. And if you are a Florida State Seminole fan, which I know a couple of our friends of the show are, Hank and John Pock, same price there. Can start a pretty good team of FSU guys. Throwing Brooks Koepka. You got three of six. There's a couple of more in the field as well. But regardless, Hank, check out that data article. Again, I hate to bring it up again, but he was in the top 10 of golfer strokes gained total over the past nine golf tournaments. 6,900. I mean, that's a reason to blindly play him. We need to find reasons to play these guys. And for me, that's one of them. He's been playing good. Strokes gained total is a pretty good metric, I would assume, to look at. So I got it. You got to like Hank this week. Guy that I want to ask you about. He's missed seven straight cuts since the Players' Championship. Okay. Then all of a sudden, takes down the medalist spot in the hardest qualifier, which was filled with PGA Tour pros, and has some pretty good history at the U.S. Open in California. I'm talking about Ches Reavy. Do you want to play him at 6,800 this week, or would you rather play him at the min price next week, or neither right now?
Probably neither. But I don't know what to make of Ches. You brought this up before on the show, and I couldn't agree more. Ches is the type of guy, when he's in form, it's pretty good to press your luck, because he tends to rip off a lot of, good starts in a row. Mm-hmm. When he's out of form, he has trouble getting out of it. And you just mentioned seven straight missed cuts. I worry a little, but maybe he has found something and this is the start. I tend to say, if Ches Reavy beats me, so be it. I'd rather look to Lebiota and some of these other guys. Chad mentioned Satoshi. He's doing a lot with the putter. That's what he has to do at flat seven. I prefer Garnett. I prefer Lebiota.
Yeah, I absolutely prefer those guys. Although Kodaira has liked South Carolina as well, winning the RBC. We talked about that with CT Pan earlier. I guess if you're giving me one of those two guys, I would take Kodaira over Pan this week if we're putting them up. In terms of guys under 7K, I think I got a bunch above Kodaira at this spot. One of the guys that, now granted, with John Rahm having to withdraw, I probably wouldn't have won the contest anyway, but Tyler McCumber came to the 18th hole needing a 9-footer to make the weekend, and he missed it. And it definitely stung at the time because I had a really good lineup with Cantlay, Morikawa, and Rahm in it. With McCumber, but him missing the cut kind of tailed that. Now, he played okay at the qualifier, ended up withdrawing after 18 holes or whatever. 6,800, guy that can bomb the ball. Are you interested this week? I think I have to be, because I need to see him miss another 9-footer to cost me some money again. It's not a one-time thing. I need it to be at least a two-time thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, a friend of the show in chat, Matthew Zeman, is selling Tyler McCumber hard. He's going with the trust me. That always works. So
I like it. I like it a lot.
I'm going to take a look at this guy. I'll tell you what, he wasn't on my radar, to be honest. The approach looks good. The putter is absolutely horrendous. I'm not surprised that he missed a putt to screw something up. Seems like he's in the Luke List school right now, but game seems to be a little all over the map, and this is certainly a drop down in field strength. Yeah. So at 68, I'm not going to cross him out just yet. I do want to ask you just to, because I'm trying to envision, you've taught me a little about John Pock here.
Yeah.
You have him in relation to a guy like McCumber.
So yeah, this is where it's tough, right? Because we know that Pock is not quite as heralded as Morikawa was coming out. Morikawa, had the scoring average below 70, one of the only golfers, to do that for all 4 years. But certainly the consistency we've heard through the rounds from Pock is that it's that good. He won the Nicklaus Award. So this is a tough one. If the consistency that he's shown us on the collegiate level translates into PGA Tour success, even half as much as it did for Morikawa, he is not 6,900 in this field. He's more like 7,800, 7,900. So it's the gamble that you want to take, right? And for me, I've liked to gamble here. If you didn't gamble on Morikawa, you missed it. If you didn't do it in the first 3 weeks, because I think it was the 3M where him and Wolf basically won. I think that was his third start, in that. So you got to be early on these guys. I'll take a top 30 this week from John Pock and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this all the time. John Pach, as crazy as it sounds, is probably on the short list of guys who are most, you know, the most inefficient pricing, because he could be a superstar, and yep. we're going to look back and he's 10K. He could also be just not good. And it's like, wow, he can you imagine playing this guy in any field? We don't really know. And uncertainty always produces the opportunity for edge. You know, we have a good idea of who Ches Reavie is. We've seen him a million times. John Pach is a wild card, and that is interesting just on that merit alone.
It is. And listen, for every Colin Morikawa, there's a Norman Jeong. I mean, we bring that up when we talk about these guys with talent. But at the same token, I don't mind doing it. I don't mind going through a Norman Jeong or a John Augenstein to get to a Colin Morikawa, because that's where the edge can be had, and you only need 1 week for it to cash in. So similar price in a guy that's not turned pro yet, but did just qualify for the U.S. Open. Playing better golf, I guess. Missed the cut at the Byron on the number. Cole Hammer. I would much rather get the $100 to go to John Pach or just play Tyler McCumber.
Yeah, I don't. That's a cool name. I like that name. But yeah, I would rather play a lot of guys. Robbie Shelton is right there. Will Gordon is right there. You know, there are dart throws, and I don't know how often I'm going to have to dip. I can't stress enough. Last week was such a unique situation. We had Kyle Stanley and Russell Knox at 6,100. You just don't have that opportunity. You know, as we kind of we got a couple minutes left here and we talk about that lineup building, I don't see myself going nearly as aggressive at the top and the bottom this week.
Yeah, I think that maybe the one candidate for a semi-Kyle Stanley this week would be Andrew Putnam in our first-run ownership projections. A little veil behind the curtain here. He's projected around 11%. For me, Ben, I'm okay with that. If he would be a guy that I would throw in the Brant Snedeker, Ian Poulter, Kevin Kisner lineup, and that's it. He's a guy that does it all with his short game, but he's not playing good right now.
Yeah, the form is a little sketchy, and that can be tough. You know, one of the things, even within a round or just long-term as well, a lot of the reason that these guys are the best in the world is because when they don't have it in a round, they still post a number, and when they are off, they can turn it. And you see some of these guys, when they get off track, it's months. They can't correct it. And that's a definite red flag with some of the lower range guys.
Hey, even with some of the top end guys, like we saw it with Spieth and Fowler, kind of fall off a cliff. Now, granted, they were probably never as fine-tuned or as elite as some of these other guys like Rahm and McIlroy off the tee, which really does make things so much easier when you're good off the tee and struggling everywhere else. At least you're in the fairway. And listen, if you're struggling with your approaches or you're around the green game, if you're in the fairway more, it's going to be easier. So that's why Fowler and Spieth probably outside of that bucket a little bit.
So with Cantlay too. Like he missed four straight and then boom, he turned it around pretty quickly. And it's because of that. He's not, when you have to put strain on your putter, like the way Ricky does, it's very difficult if things get off track.
Yeah, we sure do. So it looks like some couple of shows this evening coming up. It looks like at 3 o'clock, the MLB Deeper Dive is going to come on. And then of course, stay tuned for the tip off. And then the NBA Deeper Dive and NBA Live Before Lock. That's all coming up tonight. Of course, we got the two-game slate coming up, so a lot to do. I'm sure the showdown contest on DraftKings for this stuff is probably pretty good. So not just the two-game slate, the showdown stuff as well. So got a lot of great content coming up. And right when that stuff ends, right when the NBA ends, the NFL basically starts to kick off. I know best ball, I've seen that already going around. But listen, we aren't leaving you. Golf, never. Just ever. With that being said, it's always a good time to join us, because even when the calendar turns and it's those fall circuit events, expect to see a Kevin Kisner priced at 11,000 rather than Dustin Johnson. And that's when we love to excel. Ben and I love those events. Not going to lie. They may not have a ton of attention, but we get to learn about more of these players. So a great time to stay tuned. So Ben, we've got a couple more minutes, right? I don't think we have anything right at two, do we? So we can take us right until two today. Let's talk about a couple of other deep bombs. Now, kind of McCumber, Reavie, that range was kind of my cutoff. But let's say I found this perfect lineup and I needed somebody below 6,500. Do you have any names for me this week?
Ooh,
like that's even below Will Gordon, who is not in form right now at all.
Yeah, I don't. Bill Haas. Yeah, I don't.
Hey, Billy's there. All right.
Chase Seifert, Florida State stack.
Yeah, there we go.
Yep. Gonna give some love to him. Roberto Castro, Bryson Nimmer. There's really not much down here. I would be hard pressed in a full 156 to go down this low, because I think at the end of the day, the reason you're doing that is so you can go get, and I'm not, listen, DJ and Brooks are fantastic, but I don't see it the same way as last week when I thought it was pretty clear, as did most, that you're just getting so much more bang for your buck with Kyle Stanley than everybody else. There's just not that guy this week.
Got one name at 6,500 that I'll throw out at you. His doppelgangers are at 9,900 and 9,100. So why play them when you can play the exact same guy in Hudson Swafford at 6,500? Made the cut each of the last 2 weeks. One of those guys that from Sea Island. So it's not a out of the realm thing to say that he's played the course more than everybody. He has, he's mentioned that he's played it a couple of more times than everybody. So 6,500 made the cut each of the last 2 weeks. He'll be in my GPP pool this week.
Yeah. I mean, I can say this for certain. If you're playing cash, if you're playing anything like that, you're not going to be looking down here. You're looking for one percenters, flyers, really aggressive builds. If you have a DJ Brooks lineup, you could end up down here. If you really hit the 9K range hard, you could be down here. And then you're just looking for a cut maker. Hudson Swafford finding the weekend could be enough. For me, probably Chase Seifert finding the weekend could be enough. Beer guard is here. Don't click that.
Hold on a minute here. Before we go on, we haven't seen Beauregard since the Bermuda. It's almost like 6 months over here. There's no way we're playing him, right? I mean, we got some good starts out of him a couple of years ago, but there's nothing left there, right?
So I would love to ask that guy, was it worth it to beat Tiger in the match play? Because since that moment, nothing good has happened to him on a golf course. He is a bomber, and he's been playing in Europe and it hasn't been good. I always liked that guy too. The game is not in form, but he did beat Tiger in the match play. So he's got that for all time.
He's got that going for him to tell his grandkids if nothing else down the road. So, all right, I'm going down here. I do have a guy that qualified for the U.S. Open that is all the way down at 6,200. He was chalk at one event this year. I couldn't believe it, but he was. Talking about Chris Baker, I mean, does it – 6,200, will he get in one lineup for you, given the fact that he played some decent golf 2 days ago?
Well, he hasn't been doing much. I could say that.
Nothing.
Much. Really not good. Probably not, but that's also a product of how many lineups you play. If I was building 150, which I am not, he could find his way in just because I don't think there's anything down here. More often than not, though, I'll probably tidy it up and roll those shares. Quick plug, though, if you want to see how we're going to do that, go and check out our pro plays. Me, Jason, Alex, Mac, the whole team. We have such good guys. Jeff, you can see how are we doing it. Eric, of course, who will join me tomorrow afternoon. Time change.
That
3 o'clock Eastern. Okay. But yes, that is a great tool. And it's some of these things where you can see, okay, this guy's a sleeper or maybe one of those flyers that we talked about.
For sure. So that's a nice plug. 3 o'clock tomorrow. Come check out Ben and Eric. They're going to go over any weather concerns at the top of the show. Our chat friend, I think it was Matt, mentioned that there's rain in the forecast. So Ben and Eric will break that down and so much more. And of course, we love major weeks and the fact that it's the U.S. Open next week. We will be kicking off coverage. So stay tuned for that to get our schedule there. But until next week, everybody, there are some huge contests going on this week and some opportunities to win some satellites into the Millionaire Makers for next week. So until then, everybody, good luck at the Palmetto Championship. Enjoy the Congaree. We'll see you on the other side. Cheers.